With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is the View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today's Wednesday, the 28th of November, 2018. My name's Patrick Smith, back in domestic action for the Belfast Giants, and there's a lot of action both at home in the NCAA Friendship Four and away, where they douse the flames and extinguish the blaze to pick up another 4 points on the road. Joining me? Well, let's start off. I'm not going to play the full thing. I'm just going to say, with a totally tropical taste. How are you doing, Says?
I'm very well. Mr. Patrick Smith, how are you?
Not too bad. Going Simon Kitchen, going coast to coast. How do you get on?
It was really good, actually. Obviously, we're going to go and talk about it later on. The hockey was just lights out, unbelievable. All four games were entertaining. The final was just unreal. But yeah, it was good fun. Murph's good crack, as we all know. So, you know, just sitting alongside him. And I mean, you had mentioned a couple last week in the Continental Cup. You know, there was a period where I had to go through probably 2.5-3 minutes of action from end to end. Yep. There was one stage at one of the games, I think it was on Saturday night. I think he went 6.5 minutes, literally without breathing. and it was just incredible. But fantastic. Again, for the Odyssey Trust and the Belfast Giants to put this Friendship Four on, it was seriously the best yet so far, in my opinion.
Here, here. Well, we'll get on to that. And also, enjoying the Friendship Four this weekend.
Oh, baby.
How are you, mate?
It's just not going to go away, is it? Like, I just went from really enjoying the love.
Oh, baby.
It's never going away, mate. Never going away.
Oh, baby.
It's going to be stored on this box forever.
Oh, baby.
Right, come on. That'll do. That is plenty. Good evening, Patrick Smith. I was going to say it's good to be here, but that remains to be seen.
How do you enjoy the Friendship Four?
Had an absolute blast, mate. It was a different experience for me. Obviously, as I said before, this is my first year sort of dipping my toe into the media side of things. And I've come as a fan before and had an absolute blast. But to see the inner workings and behind the scenes, kind of similar to the Continental Cup, just to see how everything moves and the sort of countless moving parts that make up a tournament like that. But had an absolute blast. Definitely challenged between, you know, running our live blogs and interviews post-game and doing a bit of TV with Neil Whiteside for Robert. But absolutely loved every minute.
It is a different experience. But we'll get on to that, right? We've got a great show ahead of you. We're talking about the games that the Belfast Giants undertook in Coventry and in Guildford. We're going to be hearing from Kevin Rain and Adam Keefe when Sis went down to training. And we'll be asking Kendall McFall your TFA questions. But let's start, as I said, with those two games at the weekend. And we start at the Sky Dome, where the Belfast Giants returned to Elite League action against the Coventry Blaze. A win in Coventry last time was a bit of a tight affair. This one was absolutely no different.
It's a 2-1 game. We're playing great.
Yep, it was a 2-1 game, and the Belfast Giants took that victory. It was the Coventry Blaze who actually opened the scoring in the second period. Alex Nikifork, the former Nottingham Panther, taking the lead for the Coventry Blaze. But on the power play, just in front of goal, Dustin John with a tip, 10 minutes into that second period to make it 1-1. And so it was a really tight, edgy affair with a fight and quite a few hits and a bit of bad blood, I think, in the game. But was there to be a winner? And as the game wound down and Curtis Leonard took a 2-minute hooking call, we thought, Giants just need to hold this out, maybe get the overtime. We didn't count on Kyle Bond, did we? Coast to coast, when he took up the puck over the red line, over the blue line, forehand, backhand, roofed it, shorthanded, unassisted, 2-1 win.
Good night, Jim Kite.
2-1 win. What was that, Doug?
It's a 2-1 game. We're playing great.
You're absolutely correct. In regards to goalkeepers, Tyler Beskarowani with 38 saves on 39 shots, and Mika Vikman, the other side, 34 saves on 36 shots. Your referees on the night were Tom Darnell and Dean Smith. Says, of course, you'll have watched this back because you were on comms on the night, but I hasten to say the Giants actually didn't have one of their best performances of the season.
We could have been 4, maybe 5 down at the end of the first period. We really didn't get going at all. But still coming out with a 2-1 win after not playing well. It just shows that the guys are still buying in, getting a wee bit of luck going their way. And you've got to take it when it comes along. You know, you mentioned there about Nikifork getting the goal. It was a really good goal too. Back door, top corner. Besko going post to post, and unfortunately just couldn't get there in time, but it was a good reaction. We got a goal on the power play. Magic heads up play by Lenny, the slap pass right into Dustin John, and all he'd do is tap it into the net with a redirect. And then, you know, as you mentioned about the little bit of physical play, do you want to talk about that now, or do you want to
go for it, mate? Again, there was an incident between Morris and Beauvillier.
He got 2+10 for the initial call.
Boarding?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's maybe a wee
I'm not,
bit
I'm
harsh.
Not that set on myself, mate.
You know, I think it's a wee bit harsh, but I can understand that looking from where the referee who called it, who was right, literally in line with him, but behind him, he doesn't need the naked bit of a shove into the back. So you can sort of forget that. But Morris skating from 50, 60 feet, and doesn't get an instigator penalty, absolutely wrong. And for that, he gets fed his dinner.
100%.
Frankie was outstanding. You know, great to see him stand up for himself. He was getting called 2+10 anyway. He basically missed the whole period. It was 17 minutes in penalties for that. And it's good to see him stand up for himself. And literally, he caught him an absolute wonder punch. I was sitting watching game back. I actually watched that game while there was no pod or webcast on the Sunday in Guildford, so I watched that game all the way back. And again, it was difficult watching. It really, really was. Because we've been used to playing so well in the last number of weeks. But great for that, for Frankie. And then the incident with Jonathan Ferland.
Yes.
When Hache, I think you call the guy, ended up getting put into the boards. I think that's Hache's fault. I think if he stays facing the boards, Ferdy's going to, you know, basically tie him up. He's going to basically hold him on the boards, stick and get in there, push him against the wall itself. He's not going to do much more. I don't think he's going to, you know, John Ferland wouldn't have went in and cross-checking him from behind. That's not the type of player he is. But when he turns around, you know, he's faced more or less face-to-face with Ferdy. What do you got to do? I'd finish the head as well.
Yep.
So I don't think it was a penalty. He didn't get a penalty for it. Hache ended up getting, somebody said, 4 stitches in the head. And I know Stu and Ed, you know, they weren't overly happy with the call and they, you know, ranted and raved a bit.
I disagreed with the ranted and raved. I agree with you. I thought he was falling over. And by the way that he twisted the turn and he went into the boards, it's an unfortunate accident. Likewise, when they talked about, was it Vandermeer and Morris and the collision that they had, neither two of them redirected. You know what I mean? The two of them both continued on their line and came together. But
Norbert either hits that big. They were kind of a little bit above a shove. It was just that body positioning was bad. Like, you can't shout about chucking guys from games just because an injury's caused. You know what I mean? The accidents happen. And you can see there was
an easy way of looking at this. A very, very easy way of looking at this. None of the players jumped in.
Yeah. No. Rudy went and got a towel for Hashi after he burst his head open. You know, there's no intent there at all. Rudy went and got a towel to hold against his head.
So
players know what's a bad hit. They knew that Fairley, that it wasn't a bad hit on Fairley, otherwise somebody would have jumped him. That's it. That's the game right there. So there wasn't a penalty for me. Nothing called on the night. There was even, you know, Stu and Edward were basically saying about, you know, retrospective refereeing, and it's going to have to go to Dobbs.
Nonsense. Joel, come to you. You know, your take on the game. We haven't dealt with the Kyle Bond goal. Well, I'll leave that to you. But the it was a tough, edgy game. It wasn't the Giants' best performance, but as Sid said, you know, when you come out with the 2 points in regulation, you just, you know, you put it in the bag and you move on.
We won ugly, boys, and there's nothing wrong with winning ugly as long as you're winning. You know, it's a big ask to go back out on the road after, you know, your homecoming should be back to creature comforts. And the Belfast Giants homecoming was, again, another alien experience. You're coming back to play European competition. You're playing a really intense weekend, and then straight back out on the road and into the Sky Dome and into the Spectrum. You know, two buildings where the Sky Dome has been tough for us to pick up points down the years on a lot of really scrappy affairs. And the Spectrum, of course, is where we draw points early in the season. I don't care. As long as we are coming away with the win, I don't care. There are definitely moments in that game that I'm not stoked on. I think we were very sloppy kind of mid-game and towards the end. There were a couple of really sloppy turnovers. It was quite chippy on behalf of the Giants. You know, that shove from Vandermeer on Morris was, I would say, avoidable. The one on, sorry, he was the one before the burst his head.
The one on Hashi.
Not a lot in it, accidental, but you could tell that the Giants were not playing silky smooth, excellent hockey. The story of the game for me were the goaltenders, especially in the kind of first half of the game, the first period specifically. Mika Vikman was actually on form. You have to hand it to him. He made some excellent saves, a couple of sprawling saves forward that were really impressive. But Tyler Beskarwani, he's the guy on those kinds of nights that you're going to rely on, and that we have relied on, that we will do for the rest of the stretch. There was an early, really early in the first period, a 2-on-1 breakaway where Ross Venus fed Luke Ferrara across the front of goal. You see those go in so many times in this league, and not only does Besko make the save, but it's just the manner for me in which he does it. And he's been doing it all season long. He moves like silk. He tracks the puck like a hawk. He's like a hawk who's seen a field mouse. You know,
any more cliches coming on here, mate? Any more synonyms? So keep them coming.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. He's alert. He's calm.
Oh, baby!
it's technique driven goaltending. Just phenomenal. He does it on wraparounds too. He stuffed a lot of wraparounds early in that game, and that has an impact, I think, on our defensemen. Our forwards were not electric on the night, but our defensemen they don't feel like they're the last gasp between the puck and the goal, and so because of that, they play relaxed and they play creative. I think a lot of our offense and a lot of our goals this season start from our ability to play loose and fun defense. We're like a defensively proactive team, not a reactive one. It's just an absolute joy to watch. But as you say, Patrick, chippy game that we stayed in. We were solid at the back. That their Coventry goal, to be fair, was an absolute snipe. Really, really enjoyable goal from a really tight angle. I would probably challenge any goaltender to do a better job. You know, Besko was coming across, but really hard to get back to. And are we ready to talk about the Kyle Bond goal now?
Go for it, mate.
With, what, like 59 seconds
59
left?
59 seconds on the clock. He intercepts a bad pass across the blue line and he's away.
He does. Neutral zone the whole way down into the slot, dangles left, and he just holds it for that extra split second. And what a snipe. Just the composure and the calmness with which he finished that with the clock running against him was just phenomenal. Kyle Bond is absolutely clutch. And he's the story of that game after a very kind of defensive and gritty performance.
Says, you know, from a Coventry point of view, to give that up on the power play and at the death when, you know, you should be pushing for the winner yourself with a minute to go, but such a loose pass. You have to say, however, the Giants' PK disrupted them, and maybe that's why the loose pass was there.
Yeah, I mean, the PK was probably the positive coming out of the weekend. The other thing about it is, you know, they were down to 3D. They lost a couple of guys during the game, and obviously Hache was taken out. So, you know, playing, I think it was the 26 or 27 minutes with 3D and having to maybe drop somebody else back there to help out is tough. That guy, number 33, Brennesheven or something you call him, the Norwegian guy, you know, he played, I think he must have been on at least 16 or 17 minutes in that last period. So he's a decent player, and he was gassed. You know, even trying to swing a stick at Bonner as he's skating up the ice for that game-winning goal, shorthanded, you could see that he's absolutely done. So, you know, once that goes in with 59 seconds to go, that just sucks a life right out of him. So I think Coventry will be disappointed not to get the win. And in fairness, they probably deserve something out of the game. You know, it's great that they win in regulation. And again, give us a lot of confidence to get into Sunday, which is always a hard place to go to.
Absolutely. We'll wrap that up with regards to the Coventry Blaze. The 2-1 win at the Sky Dome. You can get the highlights of that from Blaze TV, which you also find on kingdomofthegiants.com. And we move on to Sunday, where the Belfast Giants travelled down, probably down the M6, the M40, onto the M25 and off at Guildford and into Surrey. I've done that drive many times. The 42, 40. 25. And then into Surrey to face the Guildford Flames at the Spectrum. Of course, Guildford were the last team to take a win over the Belfast Giants back on the 21st of October. That 3-2 loss that came with a death. Sorry, a domestic win, of course. Katowice took the Continental Cup win just the other week. However, the Giants looked for revenge and they got it, a 4-1 win against the Flames. Scoring was opened in the first period by Darcy Murphy, but equalised about 5-6 minutes later by Brett Ferguson. Finally into that Guildford squad. I haven't been stuck in Australia for a while. Into the second period, and Swinney with a lovely snipe, and with 15 minutes on that in the second period to make it 2-1. And that 2-1 game. Oh, hold on. Did I say 2-1 game? Sorry, can't say
2-1. You sure 2-1 did. Game. We're playing great.
I can't say a 2-1 game. That 2-1 game continued into the third period, late into the third period, when Guildford actually pulled Travis Fulton from the game with just over a minute to go. Blair Riley scoring the empty netter. And, well, if you were to believe the Elite League Twitter, Flash Scores, and the Guildford Flames' own Twitter, that's where the scoring ended. But it wasn't. David Rutherford with a second empty net goal 16 seconds later made it 4-1. In net, Savoy spoke about Travis Fullerton, 33 saves of 35 shots. And the other side, Tyler Besker-Owani, 33 saves of 34 shots. Your referees on the night were Dean Smith and Dandy Alton. Joel, start with you in this one. Guildford, very difficult place to go, which has been told by the likes of, you know, Sheffield struggled there. We struggled. Our last domestic loss was there over a month ago. Hard to believe, but it was. And it was a battle in that game.
Yeah, much the same as the Sky Dome the night before. It wasn't the most beautiful hockey you'll see the Giants play. But to be honest, I'm always the first to pump the tires and get stoked and get riled up and make absolutely exaggerated claims on this show. But with my hand on my heart, I thought we were probably going to drop at least one over the weekend. Just with how we've been playing, with the congestion of fixtures, with European competition giving way to another road trip, it's been a really, really tough schedule this first half of the season. And I'm not bothered by the nature in which we pick the points up. It's the fact that we can go in and do the damn thing. You know, the Swinney game-winning goal, that was Swinney from Boxy from Jelena. So being able to turn to the depth of our roster and being able to turn to defensemen to put up points, absolutely critical. You know, the rest of the game, Darcy Murphy, Rudy and Riles just completely ran riot once again. That first goal was just, it was a real gritty Adam Keefe kind of goal. There was nothing nice about it. You know, they dug that puck out from behind the goal and the three of them were just swarming. Darcy was just standing at that right post ready to tap it in because he knew the boys were going to cough it up. That was about 6 minutes into the game. So, you lay a sort of a stamp on that game, a Grimaldi stamp on that game. There's one from the past for you. You're going to come in and you're going to play gritty and you're going to pin high and you're going to work the corners. And that's what this Giants team can do whenever they're not feeling too flashy. Aside from that, you know, the two empty netters were the best line ever yet again. But I was having to think about this one today, and I would like to ask, if you don't mind, what you guys' depth of experience being the old hands here. You know, I'm really young, and I haven't seen much, you know, compared to you guys. You know, you're quite a bit older than me. That's literally never come up. Do you guys remember a more impactful, more complete line in recent memory than Riley, Rudy and Darcy Murphy? Because I'm struggling, to be honest, in my tenure. Yes.
I am going to say yes. And I'm wondering if Sis knows who I'm going to speak of.
I probably do, yeah. Well, is it the one with Sauce?
No, I wasn't, but that's interesting. I was going to say Rough Riel Behrens.
That's unbelievable.
I was going to say Rough Riel Behrens, who run...
Sorry for jumping in, Paddy. I mean, when you think about... you know, top lines that we had, you know, if you look at Chevy and Sauce and Chris Higgins, you know, it was half decent. Like, you know, and then you had the first year that Mike Forney was here, did he play on a line with Higgy and somebody else?
Who was the third? Because the pair of them were wee snipe shows. Who was the third? I can't remember.
Oh, I can't remember. Just ahead of went blank. But your shout, Paddy's unbelievable. Just the box. He was unbelievable.
Rough Riel Behrens, when we won the league first time round, it was the ISL. And talk about the ISL standard, they run roughshod over that league. They were just phenomenal. There was nobody could live with them. And maybe, you know what? Possibly now you could say, theoretically, Rudy Riles, it could be a better line. But I'm so steeped in the nostalgia of, you know, of that line.
I think I love that for hearing me, this stuff, though. You could have, I love hearing it.
You could have, was it Fleury, Courtney, Hoppe?
Yeah.
Even then, you know, I still would look at that with superstar Fleury in there and still think, well, you know, Rough Riel Behrens.
Well, are you willing to concede then that this line is up there with possibly bigger names, flashier names, and a different era for hockey here?
100%.
But this line is punching among those greats. That's fair.
From my point of view, yes, absolutely. Sis?
Yeah, they're playing well. But I mean, if you look at they were put together, sorry, the three of them were put together at the start of the season, and they're, you know, below average. That's why they were split up. But and to be honest, I didn't doubt they were going to be put back together again. They just need to get going. We knew Riles was hurting at the start of the season, and since he's got going, he's been unbelievable. It's a fair shout.
Coming back to the game, we know that Guildford had a game in Glasgow the night before they beat the Glasgow Clan 3-0. Now, I'm not sure if they... I would assume they flew down.
Nope.
No, they busted from Glasgow.
Yep,
on
up.
Oh, for goodness me.
Yikes.
So that would have had an effect on them, but it still, from a Giants point of view, was a tight, gritty game.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things I actually asked that morning, because I wasn't sure if they flew up or not. You know, if you think about it, if game finishes at 9:30 in Glasgow, by the time you get changed, get the bus loaded, get some food, it's probably 11 o'clock. And then leaving there to get to Guildford. Paddy, you've a better idea than I would, but I don't think it's taken anything less than 7.5 hours.
Six, seven. Well, you're doing it at night, so you're doing the whole of, you're doing the length of the M6 and the 77, but you're doing it at night, so you're probably getting through quicker. But yeah, I would say
six, seven hours. Yeah, again, they would have wanted to stop, but I mean, bus driver's got to stop, obviously. So, you know, they stop a couple of times the way down the M6, say, but. You know, they had the opportunity to fly. I know we're flying tomorrow to Dundee. So, you know, playing a lot of games, obviously midweek game the following week with us. Yep. So, you know, there's a lot of hockey to be played, but they had the opportunity to do it. They decided to bus it. And to be honest, they did look a bit leggy. We get off to a good start, as Joel's already said, Murph, Rudy and Riles, you know, combining there to put that the team one up. It was a good reaction by the Flames to come back into it and tie things up again. But Swinney with it, you know, that's not an easy shot to come on to. I know he's been playing forward the last few weeks. But, you know, coming out behind the net from Boxy, you know, and one-timer going top shelf, it's, you know, it was a great shot. Really, really impressive from Swinney. But after that, to be honest, Besko didn't have a hell of a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, they expect them to get shots on. We tried to stay in the penalty box. You know, their power play is probably one of the best in the league, if not the best in the league. I haven't looked at the stats in a while because I've been, I haven't had any home games. So, you know, they're decent on the extra man.
Yeah, still riding high on that.
What's that?
They're still riding high with regards to the power play.
Absolutely. So, you know, they do a good job on the penalty kill. That was impressive from us on Sunday night. The other thing about it is their goal, it was a bad goal for us to give up. You know, when you look at it, Ferguson, you know, they spend a wee bit of time in our zone. We're puck watching. We're not picking the guy up the back post. It was an easy enough goal. If I was Adam, I'd be a wee bit disappointed with that. But again, you know, you're sort of, you know, you're playing well. You trust in your teammates to do their job. But I just think that was probably one of the mistakes we've made in quite a while, and we get punished for it. But no, can't complain again. Not at our best the whole weekend and picking up 4 points. We're doing something right.
You're absolutely right about the schedule of the next 3 weeks. It's Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Saturday, Sunday, with Dundee being those midweek games in all 3 weeks. We'll come on to the games and how we're doing the schedule in a second. But the highlights from the game, Guildford Flames TV, not up yet. I don't think, as of the last time I looked, which was about an hour and a half ago, they weren't up. But when they do go up, we'll put them on Twitter, and you'll find them at kingdomofthegiants.com. That four-point weekend, just with a few stats from the start of October, the Belfast Giants have 19 wins from 21 games in all competitions. That's 17 wins from 18 in domestic competitions, and that's 13 wins from 14 games on the road, and it puts them top of the Elite League. Simon, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's been a great run. I think the most impressive stat from all those, Paddy, is the road trip.
Yep.
You know, 11 wins out of 12. And when you look back over the last, I think it was 21 games, we've won 19 and lost 2.
Yep.
And the 2 games that we've lost have been the third game in three.
3 days, yep. The Guildford away and Katowice.
And Katowice, you know, that's just, you know, that's title winning form. But it's November.
Yes, it is. No, yes, it is.
You know,
there's the early shout today. Is the Wednesday the 28th of November. You've heard it here first.
Yeah, but yes. Let's be honest, it is. You know, the big thing about it is it's November. As you say, the 20th of November, it's still a hell of a long way to go. We've got a lot of games coming up. We're still in the Challenge Cup. We're still in the Continental Cup. Obviously, the playoffs haven't been decided yet, but I'd like to think we're going to be in the chance of getting in there as well. But, you know, Adam's got the guys playing well. They're believing in each other. You know, they're playing. They're just doing a great job, and it makes it an awful lot. Even, you know, when I went into training this morning, but even before I got into the rink, get into the ice rink itself at Dundonald, I could hear them having a laugh while I was talking to Jenna and Joanna at reception at the Expo. I could hear them laughing and giggling on the ice from out there and taking the mick out of people. You know, and that's what comes with confidence. You know, they're winning games, and it, there's no better feeling. Like, you know, they'll all be feeling really, really good about themselves. But as I say, let's not get carried away. There's a long, long, long way to go yet.
The man who said we're entitled to win on form says, don't get carried away, Joel.
Joel, and here we go. Let's get carried away.
Well, feel free. You know, I totally agree with Says. When things are going really well, atmospheres are always really good. You know, and the lads are in good form. Training this week with Alan Shearer, which is interesting. But yeah,
the other thing about that, on their day off,
they're in training.
They're in training. Their day off, and that's a big thing.
Yeah.
That is their day off. Monday was their day off yesterday. So, I mean, they're travelling back from Guildford early yesterday morning, and the majority of the guys were in the gym yesterday afternoon. And I'll tell you, I bet you Adam wasn't telling them to be in there.
Fair. Joel?
Look, yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of dishing out the broad generalizations and getting overexcited, as you guys well know. And every time I do post-game, a little bit of the fan in me always leaks out a little bit after a good game. Oh, ticks. I come charging down into the tunnel looking for Kiefer to tell me that we're on our way to win the league. And he always sort of looks at me with that slightly raised eyebrow, you know, that kind of death stare. And that's before, you can't see that on the audio, obviously, but that's before he tells me, oh, you know, you can't get too high with the highs, too low with the lows, as if to say, right, Joel, chill out. So, but like, I just, there's something about this team this year. I have no doubt that we're going to experience our troughs again. We're on an extended peak right now, and it's a lot of fun, and I hope we can ride it for as long as possible. There are challenges ahead, and I'm knocking on wood as I say it, but it's a long, long season. We have been very fortunate with injuries so far. They can always be a spanner in the works. There's a complete change in tone for whenever we begin the home stretch, kind of running towards Christmas and post-Christmas. You know, those home comforts are fantastic, but psychologically they alter the way you address a game. Those guys are coming in at the moment on the road every single weekend on an extended period, and they have their backs against the wall. So you're ready to go out and play gritty and get in faces. And you've seen the way like guys like David Rutherford have been playing with that extra little chip on their shoulder. So it remains to be seen if we can maintain that intensity and that grit on an extended home stretch, whenever you've got home comforts, whenever you're used to being at home and everything's a little bit more comfortable. I just feel above anything else, though, that this team has the extra something that puts you in contention for titles. I said it a couple of weeks ago, apparently, at A View from the Bridge Live. You can recruit good numbers. You can recruit guys based on their CV. You cannot forecast the way they're going to gel and the chemistry that will come together as a result of 20-something guys working together on the same bus in the same hotels. And for me, I think that that balance is there. It's the same feeling that I had in 13-14, the same feeling that I had when it went right down to the wire in 11-12. I just feel like there's success in this team, but I'm trying so hard not to lose the run of myself, because that's the kind of, those are the kind of takes you pay for.
Well, let's say it is November. December ahead, as I said, we've got that run of Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Saturday, Sunday. But in December itself, there are 13 games across 30 days, which is going to be a real tough test. And then we come into January, where we've got the Continental Cup, and hopefully, touch wood, you're throwing in another couple of semi-final games and blah, blah, blah. We got a long way ahead of us. That, but we no doubt the current run of form that the Giants is on, very entertaining, very good to see, and long may it continue. We're going to move on. Before we come to the interviews, we'll do our usual sort of thank you to the guys at beer52.com. Beer52 is the UK's number one craft beer subscription service. If you like to taste your different craft beers from across the world or just across the UK, they're the guys to go with. It's light and dark beers this month. I enjoyed one too many at the weekend. I think the box is empty now. But it was great. You can get their beers from beer52.com/AVFTB. And of course, the first box is free. And thanks to beer52.com for the support. And to you for supporting them and therefore supporting us. Interviews time. We're going to hear in a minute from Adam Keefe and his reflections on the weekend. But first up, here's Kevin Rain.
Joined McKevin Rain after practice Tuesday morning. Called you over to get an interview. Somebody just try and jump in front of you?
Yeah, Basco thinks that every interview is his, and so he was first in line, but I told him to step aside. It's my turn. He's got to share the spotlight here and there.
6 weeks back in Belfast. Things are going pretty well.
Yeah, no, we're really excited. Obviously, I think we've won something like, correct me if I'm wrong, 18 out of 20 or something close to that. And so we're rolling, we're hot, we're confident, and the only person that's going to beat us right now is ourselves. And so we just got to make sure we're staying on our habits and practicing hard and keeping good habits, and that's about it.
The weekend passed, a tough game against Coventry. Probably not one of our better games, but coming out with 2 points is very important.
Yeah, they came hard and they pressured us, but we were able to kind of weather that. And, you know, we come away with another tough road win, and it's just like any other game. And so we go in there, get 2 points, and then fortunate enough to get the 2 points again the next night. And like I said, we're just rolling.
Tomorrow, Challenge Cup, quarter final. You were a Challenge Cup champion last year. Fancy getting another one, Loughborough, in your neck this year?
Well, let's try to go back to back, right? So we're flying in tomorrow, and you know, business as usual. Another game for us, and we face every game the same, and we're going to go in there with the same mindset we've carried at least the entire time I've been here, and so we're just going to do it again.
Adam, practice Tuesday morning just to get the legs going again after another tough weekend, but coming away with 4 points over Coventry and Guildford, and Coventry's match on Saturday, probably not one of our better performances this year, but picking up the 2 points is just finding a way to win is important.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's kind of the one thing that we can learn from this weekend is I thought we can be better, and you know, that's it, just tighten up a few areas, and we continue to improve. But like you said, you know, we're finding ways to win those games that we're not really feeling it, so that's important, and you know, that's what you need. You need to be able to find ways to get out those wins that maybe it's not going your way. So we certainly want to get better this week.
Your attention switches to Challenge Cup action tomorrow evening. You make a trip to Dundee. It's a tough place to go into. You've had success already this season there. What's your plans for tomorrow night?
We approach tomorrow night and worry about ourselves and you know, try to eliminate those mistakes that were costing us in Coventry and in Guildford at the start of the game anyways. I think we can start better, so that's important. But like I said, we're worried about ourselves and our game, and we'll approach tomorrow's game just like it was any other league game.
And then a big tough trip to Sheffield. They've started to turn things around, brought in a few new bodies, obviously picked up a new head coach as well. It's going to be a tough task heading into Yorkshire.
Yeah, they seem to be playing well right now. I think that they're on a 4-game win streak, so that's obviously a testament to, you know, they've changed some things there, and they've brought in some new players as well. So, you know, they're playing well, and look, I expect it to be a tough game. Like every game in this league right now is a tough game. So, you show up and you don't compete, there's a good chance you're not getting any points.
Time for the fan agenda, brought to you by our friends at Belfast Giants TV. This week, only the second man to wear the number 27 shirt for the Belfast Giants, defenseman Kendall McFaul. How are you, mate?
I'm doing great. Thanks, guys.
What a weekend. What a run the Giants have been on. But this weekend in particular, two gritty games, two hard-fought games. And we were talking about it earlier. Would it be unfair to say it's probably not the best you guys have played all season, but you still came away with the wins?
No, that's definitely accurate. I mean, I think we kind of know we didn't play up to our potential. But at the same time, you know, life on the road isn't always about playing great and playing flashy. It's about finding ways to get things done. And I think that's what we've been doing so far. And, you know, this weekend was a prime example of that, as we bared down and found a way. And, you know, we got things to work on this week heading into Dundee and Sheffield. And we know that. But at the same time, with wins, yeah, we can't be complaining about that.
The games, the away games, the continental games, they're coming week in, week out. They're pretty relentless. And for the next 3 weeks, it's three games a week. How are you dealing with that, you know, conditioning-wise, fitness-wise? Is it difficult to keep yourself, you know, in tip-top condition going into these?
I think for me, it's a little bit different. I know coming from the CAS back home, or I guess U Sports is what it's called now, I've already played more games this year than I did all of last year.
Yeah.
Which is pretty new, but at the same time, I mean, we practice less. You know, coaches do a good job of managing our on ice time. And at the same time, being a professional athlete, you have lots of time to take care of your body and make sure you're well rested, stretched out, kind of, you know, any maintenance you need to do on that. So I think obviously being on the road makes it a little bit tougher, but at the same time, we got a pretty veteran group of guys that know how to control that. And I think, we've been doing pretty well so far.
Kendo, you've got Jim Vandermeer there. I mentioned this to you last week. As two first-year pros, obviously, you know, you're spending a hell of a lot of time together. It's your first time away from North America. How are you finding Belfast, and obviously how are you finding Jim helping along and coaching with Adam?
I mean, I've loved every minute in Belfast. It's been a great city. The people have been great, fans. I got nothing but great things to say about Belfast itself. And, you know, Jim's been a helping hand right from the get-go. Because he's one of the coaches, he sits at the front of the bus, and that's also where the rookies and their young guys have to sit. So, I mean, I actually sit right behind Jim. So, I mean, right from the get-go, as soon as we started hitting the road, he was always the guy that I was talking to. And I've learned a ton from him just about the game, how to adapt the pro level, and you know, also some ins and outs of things to do to keep your body well, and also things to stay away from. And that, plus all his stories from his days, you know, playing in the NHL and playing with other guys. I mean, it seems like he always has a story for any scenario, and it's awesome to learn from that, and also, you know, to share those memories with him.
You talked about playing at U Sports, University of Saskatchewan, the last 4 or 5 years. Did you get a chance to watch any of the NCAA at the weekend?
I did, yeah. I know I went to one of the first games there. I guess it would have been BU and
Yale.
I forget who they're playing now.
UConn,
sorry, yeah.
Yeah, BU and UConn, yeah. I mean, I thought those guys, it was a pretty fast-paced game for them not used to playing on the international ice. And, I mean, that's always great hockey. I mean, playing in the youth sports, we always tried to compare ourselves to NCAA Division I schools, because it seems like they get more of the prestige than we did up in Canada. Obviously, the leagues are a little bit different, but, I mean, it's still pretty comparable hockey. And, yeah, that was great hockey to watch. I think it's awesome they come over here and, you know, showcase that to Northern Ireland and the rest of the world.
Kendall, it's Joel here. I want to dive straight into something that I asked Josh Roach last week. You've played your entire pro career in Canada, apart from, I think, two games in the AHL with Oklahoma, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
I want to look at just away from the ice, away from the Belfast Giants. It's a big move to come away from school and come straight into your first pro season in Northern Ireland. You know, it's culturally very different. The sights and sounds, the food, the accents, the people, completely different from what you're used to. And let's avoid like the hockey player cliches here. You're allowed to say whatever you want. Don't worry about offending us. We're tough-nosed people. We can take it. You know, we met at the cookery store launch right at the start of the season when you guys had just got in. And I said I would ask, you know, midway through the season, talk to me a bit about the city and your day-to-day life and the people, the food, the accents, everything. Does it still feel alien and foreign to you? Or do you feel like you're settled here now? What's it like?
Honestly, I feel right at home. I love it. Living at the Arc, I spend a lot of time downtown. I mean, if I'm not doing anything, you know, around the Arc, if I don't have any game tape to watch or, you know, nothing to do on the side of that, then Josh and I will just go downtown, grab a coffee, walk around, hit up the shops. I mean, I'm sure we've been to almost every shop downtown over and over again, half the time not buying anything. The owners are probably like, what are these guys doing? Buy something or get out, quit coming in every day.
Kissing the joint. Constantly kissing the joint.
But I mean, I don't know what to say about downtown Belfast, but I absolutely love it. And the people are always, you know, you run into people and some people recognize us as Giants and want to talk to us. Some people, you know, want to ask us what our accents, have no idea that we play hockey and still want to sit down and, you know, in chat. And I think that's great. And I think that's what makes Belfast special. I mean, I still struggle with some people's accents sometimes, if they're talking pretty fast, but other than that, I feel right at home and it's been super welcoming. And I think that's kind of the vibe I got when I first got here. And that's kind of what I liked about it, because coming from small town Saskatchewan, that's how it is back home, just on a much smaller scale, where you go downtown and people are friendly and chatting with you. To see that on a big scale here is pretty special.
It's Dicko's accent you struggle with, isn't it?
when Dicko really gets going, yeah, he can be pretty tough to understand, that's for sure.
We have a question here from...
Nothing's funnier than getting him fired up and getting him on a rant.
We've a question, a couple of questions in here from Thomas Brownlee on Twitter. I'll feed you them both and see what we come up with. First of all, how did it feel to actually play in front of an electric home crowd at the SSE during the Continental Cup?
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, seeing that building, I guess, I mean, when we first started out the year, it was pretty full. We always seem to get pretty good crowds, but I mean, it was pretty special, the Continental Cup. And I mean, especially when we played Poland and you had those Polish fans trying to join in, and
crazy.
It seemed like that just upped the level for our fans. They had to make sure that they were louder than them to drown it out. And I mean, that just makes me look forward to playing at home all that more, especially after being on the road for so long. We're looking for a little bit of a homestand and get the home crowd behind us.
The second question he asks is something he said should be asked of all players, which is, what's your favorite piece of local slang so far?
That's great.
That's a good one. That's a tough question because I don't use it, any of it really. I mean, I'm trying to incorporate some things, but I mean, it's tough for me to even remember what some of the stuff means. I know like crack was what I found was weird when I first got over here. Because, I mean, the only time you use crack back home is for a drug. And everybody's like, well, you know, how's the crack or what's the crack? And I'm like, they can't be talking about drugs.
I'm sure it's a difficult conversation back home when you say, well, how's it going? Oh, the crack is fantastic.
Yeah, like if somebody said that the crack was great last night, I would be like, whoa, you can't be doing that. So, I mean, that was pretty, Josh and I had that conversation the first time we heard it. And like, obviously, we found out pretty quick what it actually meant. And we could understand the context it was used the first time. But still, sometimes when I hear that being, you know, in a conversation, it's still, my ear catches it right away. But I'm gonna start trying to use that way when my family comes over. I can surprise them with using that, or be talking to somebody in the street and use that and get them all confused.
I know you talk about your family there. Are your family hoping to come over to maybe pick up a couple of games in Belfast over the next couple of months before the end of the season?
They are, actually. They're coming in December. My parents are coming over, my sister and her boyfriend and my girlfriend are all coming over for a couple of weeks. They're going to be here over Christmas, catch a few home games, and then they're going to head back just after the new year. So they're going to spend Christmas and new year in Belfast, and that's going to be a pretty exciting time for me. Looking forward to showing them around.
And obviously, you know, I know your dad watches the games back home. He's tweeted as him before in the webcast. If he needs us to speak a bit more slowly, then I'm sure we're going to sort that out for him.
I was actually just talking to him tonight over Skype, and he said to say hi to you guys, and he's looking forward to having a beer with you. So you can.
I don't need a second invitation. I'm all over it.
Am I up, boys?
Go for it, Joe.
Yeah, just, I want to expand on Christmas. That's obviously a big thing, having your family over for this will be, I guess, your first Christmas away from home. But obviously you're going to leave a lot of those kind of home comforts and stuff behind. Are you actually excited for a Christmas in Belfast with your family? What are the plans? You know, you've obviously got, I would imagine not every one of the team will have guys over. What are your actual plans for Christmas Day? Have you thought about it yet? What you're doing for dinner and where you're going?
I haven't planned it out too much. I know Josh and is going to have his girlfriend over here for Christmas too. Paul Swindlehurst, our other roommate, he's going to be going back to Manchester for Christmas. So I think maybe the plan is right now to host a Christmas here with my family and Josh and his girlfriend. We actually went and bought a Christmas tree this week. We just have yet to set it up and decorate. So we're trying to keep things, you know, festive over here. That's probably not something we would have done had we not had friends and family coming over. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's something different, and it's pretty special and unique to spend a Christmas, you know, somewhere besides home. It's always nice to be in the comfort of your own home, but to me, it's wherever your friends and family are. So to have my family over here for Christmas and to get it to spend it in Belfast will be something that we'll always remember.
I'm sure they'll be happy enough with the box just lying against the wall with the lights around it. It should be fine. We lived next door to Jackson Whistle in his first year here, and my wife actually had to go next door to put his tree up because he'd never done it before. So listen, our rates are competitive. Give us a call. We've got a bit of a sideshow going. One last thing for me, Kendall. If when your family come over, what are the things that you're most excited about showing them about life here?
I mean, back to the culture thing, I mean, you can't go wrong with the people in downtown. My dad, we come from, you know, Northern Irish roots. We actually have some family that my dad's been connecting with over Facebook and a few other things to try to link up with. So definitely looking forward to that. I mean, it seems like there's an abundance of things to do and see. And I honestly haven't seen a lot of them just due to the fact I knew they were coming, and some things I wanted to experience, you know, for the very first time with them. But at the same time, I think they're all looking forward to checking out what Belfast has to offer, and, you know, the history behind it, and also the great people again.
One last question before we let you go, Kendall, and it'd be amiss of me not to bring it up, because while that number 27 shirt means a lot to each of us, it means probably a hell of a lot more to you. How's the reception been? Have you been chatting? Has anybody come up and chat to you about it and the fact that you're wearing that number?
Yeah, I was, I guess I can say I was a little nervous coming into it just because I knew the the history of what number 27 meant here. And I didn't, you know, sometimes fans don't like a number to be unretired, even under any circumstances. But I mean, the fans have been great to me. I've had a few people say, you know, after games that they think it's a great way to honor my friend, and they always speak very highly of Paxton. And that's something that I definitely don't take for granted. I mean, every time I flip that jersey on, every time I walk into the rink and walk, you know, to our dressing room under the 27 that's hanging in the stands, I realize the duty I have to play hard every night to honor both Troy and Paxton. And I mean, I think hopefully I've done a pretty good job so far, and we'll continue to do it. But I mean, the fans have been very well receiving with that, and I thank them for that, because I realize it's not always easy to see a number that was been retired come back on the ice.
Yeah, that's great, mate. That's great. Listen, thank you very much for your time. Good luck in it's a tough 3 weeks. It's a tough rest of the season, but the next 3 weeks, 9 games in the space of 3 weeks is going to be a tough run. But, you know, we've been a great run so far. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
This is Adam Keefe, and you're listening to the best podcast in the Elite League, A View from the Bridge.
Right, thanks again to Kendall McFaul. It's taken us long for us to get into it, but let's get stuck into what was an unbelievable weekend at the ASSC Arena with the fourth edition of the Friendship Four. This year, Yale, Union, University of Connecticut, and BU were the four colleges that came over and gave us what were four brilliant games, let's be fair. Yale and Union, it was an OT barn burner that went to a shootout, and Union took that, so they won 2-1. What was the other game on the Friday? It was Boston BU against UConn, and BU took that 3-2. Very tight game that, but very entertaining with Tiamonte scoring the game winner 2 minutes into the third. And then we went into the consolation game, as it is, early on this Saturday. Yale winning that 6-3 and into the Bell Pot final. And as you mentioned earlier on, says what a final that was. A 2-1 win for Union College, meaning that the former Belfast Giants coach Doug Christensen was a very happy man, as was Jeff Hutchins, both former Union men. Union men? Former Union men?
We miss you, Davey.
But the goals from Union, Brett Sapinski with the first one, BU, Tiamonte for BU leveled it up in the dying minute of that first period, but the game winner went to Parker Fuhr in the second. Arguably, though, the performance of that final and the tournament came from Darian Hansen in the Union goal. But yes, Union become the second team from the ECAC, second team in a row, after Clarkson last year, to win the bell and ring that bell pot at center ice. Sis, I'll come to you in a second, because no doubt with you being behind the mic, you've got plenty to say at the tournament. I'll start with you, Joel. The excitement that we had on the ice, the passion that these guys threw out there. Once again, another phenomenal tournament, and Union well worth that win.
Oh, look, I had an absolute blast, and let's get it out of there from the start. Obviously, it was a Boston-New York final, and I'm a very, very serious sports journalist, so obviously I wasn't looking for either team to win in particular, but I just thought those Boston jerseys looked really good, and it would have been nice for them to pick up the win. But as you say, first of all, the action on ice, honestly, there's just nothing like it. You know, I know that there's a certain section of the Giants fan base who have maybe not fully engaged with it. I would say it's a small minority, but it's just a departure from what we watch week in and week out. You know, you've got the age of these kids, my goodness, it's just unbelievable. They come in with boundless energy. These guys are still going full tilt third period, and it doesn't have that same sort of level of experience as we would maybe see in the Elite League. So there's this edge of not recklessness, but it feels like a bit of a powder keg. You know, they definitely throw bodies because they're made of rubber at that age. There are definitely more wild hits and more wild plays than what you would see in the EIHL. And obviously the tournament environment pushes these guys up to the next level. The thing that absolutely stunned me, my kind of takeaway from the whole weekend, is charging down to do post game, and you've just watched guys like the BU goaltender, Jake Ottinger, who's a Dallas draft pick, guys like Darian Hansen from Union, Kevin O'Neill, the Yale forward who scored two goals on the Saturday. You're watching these guys put in these phenomenal performances in front of a packed barn, and you're standing outside the tunnel, and these children emerge out of the door. These guys that,
it's amazing, isn't it?
I'm sure that some of them are not shaven yet. You know, these spotty teens, and you put a microphone in their face, and they are, you can tell the ones that are being groomed for a long, long career in this game at a very high level. It's just phenomenal, the discipline and the composure and the maturity of such young men. I must have said it about 20 times over the weekend. You know, what was I doing at that age? And if you were at A View from the Bridge Live, that's kind of what it looked like. I'm blown away by the setup of all of these schools, by the maturity of the young men that came over, and how much they took away yet again from their experiences in the Belfast schools, and even right to the top, the coaches and the communications people behind the scenes. Everybody was just absolutely first class. I couldn't honestly have had more fun if I tried.
Says, what were the standout moments for you? That save from Darian Hansen at the death.
Out of this world.
You know, there was two. I mean, there was two wonder saves he had. He lost his stick, threw his right pad out to stop Bobo Carpenter. That was amazing. And then, you know, a minute and a half later, they got the extra skater on the ice for BU. I'm trying to remember the kid's name. Cockrell, I think it was, Cockrell?
Yeah, Cockrell, yeah.
You know, he basically, you know, tries to go around the outside of him, and he just drops it through, puts a glove. It's just that kid Hansen was unbelievable. And Joel touched on Ottinger. He played a really strong game as well. I do think he'll be disappointed with giving up the game-winning goal. You know, the defenseman made a tougher decision for him because he sort of, you know, he didn't take out the shoot, the pass. Didn't take a pass away from Parker Foo coming in. He left it open for him, and if he had took a defenseman, all the goalie then had to concentrate on was the forward coming down. So I think he's still thinking he's going to pass the puck, and Parker Foo rips one past him for ultimately the game-winning goal. But the whole weekend, Paddy, the standard of the hockey from the NCAA, we've talked about it on numerous occasions before. You know, there's kids, as Joel's already touched on, some of them aren't even shaving yet. Yet they're going to play in the NHL in the next 18 months.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I mean, there's definitely players there that will play in the NHL within the next 18 months to 2 years, for argument's sake. You know, Gavin Bayreuther scored his first goal last night for the Dallas Stars. He played here 2 years ago in his friendship four. You've got Matt Benning playing at Edmonton. There's a bucket load of them. And, you know, if you could look at the 11 draft picks up the BU roster that came in here, and obviously the couple of them, there were three or four that had literally were picked up by NHL teams in the last 2 or 3 months. I know Brady Tkachuk playing for Ottawa. I can't remember the name of the big guy that's in Minnesota, 6'6" winger, an absolute powerhouse. And he's, you know, he's playing well in for the Wild there as well. The standard of hockey was outstanding. I mean, it was just unbelievable. Fantastic at the Odyssey Trust and the Giants, obviously, all the guys behind the scenes, as Joel's touched on as well. You know, fantastic to get the put all their hard work and the 23,000 people coming in to watch that. The U.S. Embassy in Belfast, U.S. Consulate, had tweeted out yesterday how much of a success the Friendship 4 was, and that 30 million people in North America had watched the game on Saturday night.
With Simon Kitchen going coast to coast.
You know,
Nesson's own.
It's just unreal. Like, I mean, and that's, you know, I had messages from guys that I played with, who are now living in Toronto, and then there's a couple in Montreal, people were texting me and messaging me on Facebook, and then Will Mansour and the big Neil Finnerty, you know, they were basically sticking on my Facebook page, and there's my big bake sitting in the middle of their big 50-inch TV screen in their living room. But it's just incredible that the work that goes into it, the support they get from the NCAA at ECAC and Hockey East, Joe Britannia and Steve Hagwell. I mean, I spoke to Steve Hagwell last week. This is his ninth trip to Belfast. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up setting up camp here. I genuinely wouldn't. He loves Belfast. There's two more years guaranteed.
Yep.
I know Joel talked to Robert and was talking about the NHL game, which, yes, that'll certainly probably be the big thing that a lot of people will take out of the interview that Joel did with Robert. But it's not the big thing.
Nope.
The big thing is what the Giants can capitalize on off the back of this.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the rink last week. I seen your tweet, was it today or yesterday, Paddy, about the support that everybody needs to keep on knocking on doors and talking about that we need more facilities in Belfast. But yeah, this NCAA thing, it's massive, because there's one I don't know if you picked up on it, Joel, on the whole weekend, there was a lot of groups in.
Yeah.
And there's kids probably 5, 6, 7 years of age who are coming to their first hockey game.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
There was one right down in front of the media box wearing blue jumpers. And right at the end of the game on Saturday afternoon, the union parents were sitting right behind them. And when the kids were coming up the aisle after the game was over, the parents and everybody that was with Union College all stood up and gave them a round of applause.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
I want to jump in on that, Stiz, if possible. It's something that is maybe groaned about a little, let's be honest, by some sections of our fan base whenever there are a lot of kids in and whenever it's all kind of groups and whatever else. Both of those early games, I would say the entire arena, were young people from schools and different organizations or whatever. The atmosphere for both of those games were like nothing I've ever heard. They goldered for three solid periods. It doesn't even matter what the score was. They were just going hard. Like, it's two kind of sides to this, and it's maybe the big takeaway that people don't fully think about. I've always said the Sheffield Steelers, I feel like they have an older fan base. I don't think they have engaged well with younger people and with generating new fans. And there's a danger in any sport of that. You have thousands and thousands of children who, first of all, meet these guys at school during the week, and immediately they're role models. You bring a big Canadian guy in to show you hockey in your school, and then later on in the week you get to go to the arena and cheer your guts out for him. Those kids are being exposed to the sport of hockey and what it can do for you as an individual and what it can do for your community from such a young age. Those are your next generation of guys that are going to be sitting in the SSE screaming for the Giants down the road. And there's such a legacy piece there. And that's the connection for me. When Robert Fitzpatrick talks about new ice facilities in Belfast, about having a Belfast-born player on the ice in 5 years, if you're struggling to make that connection, look no further than those energized children that sat in that barn all weekend. That is the future of our club, and it's a byproduct of the Friendship Four.
100%, because one of those, if there was a facility in the Belfast City Centre or more accessible, the Donald is accessible. We talked about this at length last week, and Sis made a very good point in regards to the fact that maybe kids north of the river, west of the river of the like, and don't really get down to the Donald. You put somewhere a little bit more accessible in Belfast City Centre, you have a rake of those kids going and using it this week, this weekend, weekend after that. And they'll filter off, and some may stay and some may go, but that will help develop the game, etc., and push a bit further. Coming back to the competition as well, from my own point of view, and this is the first time I unfortunately wasn't able to make it. I had to make my choice, and I chose the Continental Cup. I made the right choice. I enjoyed that a great deal, but I missed what I sent a message to, I think it was the Aaron Murphy. I sent it. He asked me, how was the coverage, and I said, mate, I hated the coverage. I flatly hated the coverage. Not that it wasn't that good. It was excellent coverage. It's just that I know what the energy's like in that building. I know what those games are like to watch. I know how enjoyable it is to be part of that and to watch it and watch these. You're right, Joel. Watch these kids play with such intensity and passion. Watching the refs. I know Sis's long lost brother Phil Kitchen wasn't there this year, but watching the refs, let the game play, let these guys get on, let them sort it out there on the ice.
Fun. Yeah.
It's such a vibrant game to watch, and credit to the likes of Glover and Brooksy and Shane Johnson and Steve Thornton and all the guys behind the scenes who put this together. Over 23,000 people in the building over those 2 days. Phenomenal effort to bring that amount in. And yes, people say, well, it's school groups. Of course it's school groups. As Joel has put, the fact is that these guys, they're college kids. It's a school setup. STEM is a major part of this. The actual tournament ends with the ringing of a school bell. You know, that is the whole ethos of it. And yep. I'll tell you what, it gets me every single time. That I know if Davey was here, he'd bring it up because he loves it as well. But the ringing of that school bell at the end by the champ, it's quite funny because you see the captain go over to Eric Porter and Robert Fitzpatrick, and you see it every year now where Robert Fitzpatrick grabs him right up to his ear and obviously just tells him, lift this bell, don't ring it, get out the center ice and then ring it. You know, you can tell him, you can see he's telling him exactly what they have to do. But that's what he goes out, rings the school bell, call the arms, bring it in, and all the college kids can run in and just celebrate. And it gives me goosebumps every single time I see it.
Yep.
Every college that comes in. And next year, we've got New Hampshire, Northeastern, Princeton, and Colgate returning. We've got teams returning now for the fifth edition of the Friendship Four. But that's not to be left at that, because in January, those two games against the Sheffield Steelers at the start of January are preceded by NCAA women's game between Northeastern and Clarkson on both the Saturday and the Sunday. So the game and the links to the NCAA with the Belfast Giants are developing, and the women's game going in, I'm hoping they're really well attended. They should be really well attended because they're going to be equally as entertaining as the NCAA men's game that we've seen in the Friendship Four. And long may this continue. As we've said, as you've said, says, you know, the NHL and the NHL 2020, we can talk about that. I don't think we should talk about it. We'll come to that another time. Robert's brilliant interview with Joel is there on our SoundCloud, AnimalKingdomOfTheGiants.com, and the article to go alongside it. That is the headline. But the underpinning, most important thing is the ice facilities. I don't think... Is there anything further?
Sorry, Paddy. Couple of points that were addressed at the weekend. For the first time, we ended up having the first player to play in two Friendship Fours who played at the weekend for Boston University. So Max Willman,
right,
who's a graduate student at BU this year, played in the first Friendship Four for Brown. And then he came over and he was the first player to play in two. And then the biggest stat, and I thought this was brilliant. We, Neil Whiteside, I can't take credit for it. Neil Whiteside came up with this one. The four winners.
Oh, I know this. I know this one. This is awesome.
I think I told you the weekend. The four winners of the French Four have all came from the EIHL away dressing room.
Oh, yeah. I heard this all mentioned on the comedy, yeah.
Did you hear the second part, though, Sis? And I don't know if this part
is true. This bit is true. So,
is it really?
Yeah, so my understanding is the BU were supposed to be in there, and Forts and Shane Johnson took them out to put them in the trash dressing.
That is Thorts and Shane Johnson, BU championship winners.
BU graduates.
So Thorts is wearing a red tan all Saturday night. You know, he's been completely on the fence.
Absolutely.
And then when I seen young Jonah, which is Shane Johnson's son, he came in, he was wearing a BU t-shirt, he was wearing a red jacket, and Thor's kids were all wearing BU red. And to be honest, it would have been lovely if they had won it, obviously, with, so much support for them within the Giants ranks. And obviously, not forgetting about Chris Higgins, you know, he was an ex-BU guy as well. But overall, the best Friendship Four they've had to date. We've had some really good games down the years, the last 4 years. But that game at the weekend was just sensational. It was an absolute pleasure to sit beside Murph and put a wee bit into it whenever I could. And, Murph was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And, you know, all the guys behind the scenes and everything going away. You touched on James Glover. I know he's my neighbour. I know he lives next door to me.
Probably listening through the wall, mate.
He's away to that hockey room. Rollerblades on at the minute, so he's all the lights are out. But Glover was sick for the last 2 weeks, and he really wasn't well. But he's never missed his work. He was in there. And this is through the Continental Cup and leading in to the Friendship Four. I was there for the games, and I picked up a couple of practices over the last couple of weeks. But looking out, his car's not there. He was away from 9 o'clock in the morning to 10:30, 11 o'clock at night most days. Obviously Michael Barr, Ross Garvey, Joe, which is Glover's fiance, they were all there. Everybody, all the volunteers behind putting everything in the Continental Cup and the Friendship Four need to be commended. But the effort, and it couldn't be done without them. I don't care who it is. There's no way that these tournaments can be put on without volunteers. And we are in a very privileged position to work for the best organisation within the EIHL, because the rest of them haven't got a touch on the Belfast Giants.
Here, here. I'm going to move it on because, like I say, a wonderful tournament. We look forward to next year's 2019. Like I said, New Hampshire, Northeastern, Princeton and Colgate, and the games that are coming in January, the women's games between Northeastern and Clarkson. Now, I'm going to do something here. We're going to record two quick responses, and I want the people listening to skip as appropriate, because I think this news is going to come out within the next 24 hours, and I'm not sure which way it's going to go. We're pretty sure which way it's going to go. But what I'm going to say is, and start it like this. Well, isn't it great news that the Belfast Giants have been awarded the finals of the Continental Cup, which will be played in January? Hooray!
Yes!
Hooray!
Good job, boys.
Okay, stop. Unfortunately, we found out just in the last hour or so that the Belfast Giants won't be hosting the Continental Cup finals in January, and we're all going to have to go to Astana.
I hate to see it.
Listen, delete is appropriate there. I'm sure the information is going to come out in the next day or two. Let's have a quick, very, very quick look around the league. We do, for the first time in a while, where we are able to play this. Docs. Yes, there is one thing from the Department of Player Safety that took place at the weekend, and that was a one-game suspension for charging to Paul Crowder of the Fife Flyers for the incident against the Dundee Stars. Any of you gents see that?
Yeah.
Nope. Go on.
Yeah, I'm actually just looking at the slow-mo now. It's a big hit. It's a big kind of open ice hit that initially happens. That's not the one that's called on, though, right?
No. Nope.
It's the second one. Yep. Down on the boards. And I don't know, it's obviously nowhere as big as that first hit, but Crowder, you can see the spray coming off the skates. He definitely throws the brakes on, throws the arms out. The adopts say that he had the option to use the shoulder and make a legal hit, but I don't know if it's at the extent, you know, again, we're going down to the letter of the law, I guess, versus the spirit of the law. It's not a brutal hit. It's probably not dops-worthy for me, but I guess you guys will probably tell me different.
I agree with you. I think it's a bit on the edge. The key points that come from the DOPS assessment is a contact of the head, elevation, separation of the hands to make contact, unsuspecting, yeah. and that it was careless. These ones that come back as careless, I think that's why you only see one game suspensions, because, you know, it is just, you know, not keeping your stick down, blah, 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 blah. You know, that's why you see them as goes one game suspensions. Can't be, you know, I think Fife suffered for it, obviously, from the weekend, because they two games against the Dundee Stars and shut out in one and dropped a 3-goal lead to lose the other one in overtime. But yeah, I can't get too pent up about that one. I'm actually quite surprised that there was nothing came from the Sheffield Manchester game on, what day was that, on Sunday? So on Sunday, it was on Sunday. There was a few incidents of that, one in particular involving Dane Byers, not Dane Byers, he's out of his mind, where Byers hit, cross-checks a fella on the ground and then punches him on the ground. And he's got a bit of a rep at the minute where he just is losing the plot when you know, at that time, the Storm are 2 goals down. They're trying to get back into the game in the third period, and he's put his team not only on a penalty kill, but got himself kicked out of the game. So I was surprised there wasn't anything further from that. There was also a couple of incidents in the MK Panthers game. I think a couple of players fighting in the last 2 minutes. We've heard nothing from that either. But so yeah, an interesting week in regards to that.
Tommy, did you actually see the incident with Dane Byers where he was thrown out?
He's on another level. Yeah, the incident he was thrown out for, it was the player was on the ground.
I know, but did you see the lead up to it?
Oh yeah.
So Barge comes in. I mean, he miscontrols the puck coming over the line. He turns back to, I can't remember what, it was a Westerling? I think it was Westerling. So he turns around to Westerling, you know, back checking against him, tries to lift the stick off the ice to take the puck away from him. Westerling hits himself in the face with his own stick. That's what happened there. I'm pretty sure that's what Barge is saying to him when he's on the deck and he's rubbing his face into the ice. You know, he didn't hit him with a stick. He did not hit him with his own stick.
Yeah.
So Westerling's hit himself in the face with his own stick. Yes, you know, it's lifted up by Barge's stick. They hit himself in the face with his own equipment.
Yeah, but...
And then, obviously, you know, I am surprised there's... But let's be honest, I mean, the Manchester Storm, well, Paddy, don't you say anything. But you know, the Manchester Storm, they're a bit of a bloody joke. Like, I mean, they really are. You know, I don't think they've won away from home this season, have they?
A friend of mine said that, you know, they're a team lacking in hockey smarts. And you can see that when you're, like I say, when you're two goals down in the third period and you conspire to get yourself thrown out of the game pretty cheaply.
Yeah, but again, that's leading back to the big hit from Davey Phillips.
Yeah.
When Springer jumped in and you know, sort of wrestled him to the ground. There was not much of a fight in there, but I didn't see anything wrong with Davey Phillips. There's a lot of people ranting and raving about it and said he hit Kieran Long in the head. And do you know what? He probably did make contact with his head and more likely did. But
Long's, you know, head's down.
Kieran, 100%. He'll have to, you know, we'll put it this way. It's karma, because he was the one who took Big Ferland out and kept Ferland out for a month. So it'll tighten them up.
Interesting result. Oh, sorry, no player movements, I don't think, since we talked about Munson last week. Interesting results. Dundee, we'll talk about them in a second, but they took a 4-point weekend, as I said, over the Five Flyers. But the most notable result from the weekend, Joe, was Milton Keynes Lightning taking an overtime victory against the Cardiff Devils at Ice Arena Wales.
They're slumping, boys. It's happening. The crowd's turning as well. I saw on Twitter today, people are cracking up now. Hashtag Bouncy out. I think they need to hang a big banner in Ice Arena Wales of just the big blue tint to remind the newbies of where they've come from. You know, it's in the same way as that we're on a peak right now. I have no doubt that we will dip and whatever else. The Cardiff Devils are not entitled to win every game, regardless of who it's against. They definitely have a few issues that they're trying to work around right now. I think there's a little bit of panic in Cardiff, to be honest. But on the flip side to that, I think that Milton Keynes Lightning team are a group that are gelled and are kind of forged together because of the negative experiences they've had early in the season. Because, I mean, they didn't even get a coach until, what, 4 or 5 games into the season. And
it's a 2-1 game. We're playing great.
You sure were at the weekend. You'd have loved it. You know, that's a team that are playing for each other. And whenever you've got a team that are sort of backs against the wall, forged together because of negative circumstances, they're going to surprise you. And it just was the perfect storm of Cardiff not being at their very best right now. I think there's something to be said for a point that was made on the show by yourselves a couple of weeks ago, in that Cardiff's defense are not as lights out as they've been in previous years. Mm-hmm. And maybe Bounds is being spotlighted a little bit and having some flaws that were maybe not seen before. But you cannot take away from the Milton Keynes Lightning and their fans, who have weathered some pretty tough times this season so far and taken a big 2 points. And it's good news for us.
Especially the hammering said that they took on Free Sports at the start of the season at Ice Arena Wales. Says your thoughts. Like, I saw that our good friend Vic Silverwood was on Twitter talking about that. I said, listen, what's happening there? You know, well, what's the wobble? And she highlights that maybe there's a player or two that have stayed maybe a season too long.
Good. I don't think the Devils are finished. You know,
Absolutely not.
There's still a long way to go in this season. Yes, they'll be disappointed. You just touched on it there, Paddy, a few seconds ago, that the last time MK went in there, they got embarrassed. You know, that sticks in players' minds. They, you know, you get that little bit of extra effort out of them. Obviously, they've got rid of, like, the coach, Doug McKay. Landers?
Yeah.
Ryan Lannan.
Wallace as well. And his coach.
Wallace. You know, so they're taking on the coaching duties. I think they've won 3 of their last 5. So, you know, they're doing reasonably well. It's just, you know, getting a new face in the dressing room. Sometimes it, picks you up. They've got, I mean, their goaltender's an absolute class act. I think he was, you know, he's played well against us apart from the 7-0 shootout and shutout of him. But you know, he's a decent goalie, and they've got some, they do have some players that can play, but you know, it's going to be tough for them. It's you know, when you're down the bottom of the table and you want to try and push up to make the playoff, it's difficult. But you know, I thought that that's fantastic throughout the weekend. I watched it, the Sheffield game after it finished, watching the Giants and Coventry, because there's no webcast yet from Guildford, which I still think is a bloody joke. But you know, I watched a wee bit of like the Cardiff game as well, and you know, I always sort of, when we've got games coming up, I'd start to keep an eye on teams we're looking to play. And obviously, we'll come in 2 weeks' time. So, you know, went back and watched their games, and MK deserved it. You know, from what I watched, I didn't watch the whole thing, but you know, they commended, they were down. They managed to get back in. It took them to overtime. I got the OT winner with about 90 seconds remaining. And you could see, you hear a few boos going around the arena in the Ice Arena Wales. I'm sure Todd Cameron will not be happy, and Andrew Lord will be happy. But you know what? It's, as I say, any team in this league can beat you on any given night. If you don't come in with the right attitude, you're going to get your ass handed to you.
Yeah,
and that's what happened.
It's, there's going to be adversity for all teams, and the Giants are going to hit theirs. But at this time, the Giants sit top of your Elite Ice Hockey League. 21 games played, 34 points in the bag. Cardiff Devils sitting second, 20 games played, 30 points. Nottingham, 23 and 29 points. Fife Flyers, 22 games, 28 points. And then you've Guildford, Sheffield, Coventry, Glasgow, Manchester, Dundee, who with their four-point weekend leapfrog the Milton Keynes Lightning, who despite their OT win over the Cardiff Devils sit bottom, 21 games played, 14 points. We move on and have a quick look at the three games we have this weekend. First up on Wednesday night, tonight is the first leg of the quarterfinal of the Challenge Cup against the Dundee Stars, 7:30 p.m. in the DIA. You can get the webcast from Stars TV. Of course, the second leg is on the 11th of December back at the SSE Arena. And this weekend, well, it's a mouthwatering encounter, the first of the season. Two of them, Saturday and Sunday, against what you could arguably describe as a resurgent Sheffield Steelers. Saturday at 7 p.m, Sunday at 4 p.m. Steelers TV webcast. Let's start, says, with those that game against Dundee. 4-point weekend for them. If he's listening, I'm going to apologise to Omar Pasha. I had intended to bring him on the show this week, because I don't think we've spoken to him in a while. I've had a hectic week, didn't get a chance. So, but we're playing him three times in 3 weeks. So I guarantee that you will hear Omar Pasha's voice on this podcast within the next 3 weeks. But yeah, says, they are, you know, they've got a 4-point weekend on a hard fought 4-point weekend, given that coming back from 3-0 down with Craig Halton goal.
Yeah, and you know, they're looking forward to coming in tonight. But you know, Fife, we talked about Fife a few weeks ago, you know, we said Shane Owen always gives them a chance to win. They were 3-0 up, they end up coming back and getting beaten over time. And as I say, Sheepdog went in the shootout halfway through it after Shogren get hurt. Now, I don't know if Shogren's back for tomorrow night. I have no idea. But, you know, Sheepdog's played against us before and he's beat us before. So, you know, they'll be feeling confident, especially in their own barn. And it's always tough to go there. I know the boys are flying in tomorrow morning, play there tomorrow night. And then I'm pretty sure they're flying back on Thursday. So, you know, hopefully they get a bit of rest and get ready for the weekend. But with being the Challenge Cup, it's a two-legged affair. Yes, you want to try and get a, you know, a comfortable position. If you can get a, if we can get back with a goal or two up after the first game, I think it puts you in a good position.
And then we'll go on to, I'll take both of you to this regards to you, Joel. You know, you're travelling over to Sheffield for what is, it's going to be a good weekend. I think it's going to be a good battle.
Yeah, excuse me. Sorry, battle is the word. This looks set to be, I would say, one of our biggest traveling contingents in years, and that would be over and above even the Challenge Cup final. From what I saw on the site during the week there, the away block is pretty much close to a sellout. It's down to the last kind of ones and twos. There's definitely a lot of buzz. It feels like everybody I know is heading over. Everybody is absolutely charged and ready to go. There's a little bit
of concern for me, to be honest. People keep asking me if I'm looking forward to it. Not in the slightest, not even a little bit. It's it's going to be anxious, nervous, intense hockey, but it's what we're here for. It is the moments that you look back on at the end of a season and realize that they defined that season. And I think a lot of people are looking at the four-pointer that we took the last time under Derek Walser.
Yeah.
That big four-point weekend.
Oh, no.
Was it Kiefer's first year? Yeah, sorry, it was. It was last season, and there was one before with Wally. We had a great time, but it's always a great time on the road in Sheffield, but it's because it's that kind of powder keg environment. But I think a lot of people are just going over and expecting us to bulldoze. Make no mistake, this is going to be a tough weekend. We're going to have to battle. That building makes me nervous. It always has done. I don't enjoy watching hockey in it. I love winning in it, and I love drinking other beer afterwards, but I definitely don't enjoy watching games in it. Regardless, though, we are heading into, I would say, one of the weekends that will define the season of the Belfast Giants. We will look back at the kind of on the edge of summer, and we'll say this is where it all turned, and this is where we started to properly believe. But my goodness, I'm going to be watching through my hands.
I was thinking there about how I said there were no player movements. There was Eric Neely, came back from MK. Actually, when I heard that, Sheffield have pulled a player back from MK, I thought, oh, Cole Shudra? No, not the guy that's on loan. No, Eric Neely. But they pulled Neely back in. Tom Barrasso, not giving him the best review in a post-game of the game of the Storm, saying that he's not up to their level of fitness, not up to their level of speed, but still a player that's going to bolster their side. They've put a new goalie in Climie, who... Let's be fair. I'll tell you what. See if Climie starts both games. That's a real kick in the backside, kick in the nuts for Jackson Whistle. For a guy who, and we're not going to get into the whole Whistle bashing. You can do if you want, but for a guy who made that move to with the climbing the ladder comment, et cetera. But they made that move for the benefit of his own game. If he doesn't play at least once against the Belfast Giants, and Climie plays both games, that's not a real positive thing, especially this week with Tom Barrasso coming out saying that Brad Day, who's been playing for Hull and playing for others, is still part of their setup, but they're going to get rid of at least one goalkeeper. It doesn't sound good for Jackson at the minute. However, let's get back to it. It says it's going to be a tough, tough weekend for the Giants.
Yeah, it's always tough in Sheffield. We're playing well. They've started to pick a few points up. They've won four in a row for the league. So, they'll be feeling confident about themselves. The goalie that's come in, I think he's only lost one game since he's came in. I think he started them all since he came in. I think he has started them all since he came in. So, he's giving them a bit of confidence at the back end. Defensemen, they like to feel they've got a goalie behind them that they can trust and out some big saves. And for all intents and purposes, again, I haven't watched Sheffield at all this year apart from a couple of highlights. Listening to some of the Sheffield fans saying, Jackson was playing well, but the players weren't in front of him. So, it's going to be a tough, tough weekend. Let's not take anything away from it. The boys will be concentrating on tomorrow night to start with, mm-hmm. and then they'll look to Saturday, and then, depending on what happens Saturday, they'll look to Sunday. So I expect Climie to start both games. I don't think Barrasso's going to give Jackson a sniff unless he's injured.
What's that say about Climie? Jackson?
What's that?
What does that say about Jackson?
He's a backup.
Considering the reason he made the move, is that not a real kick in the backside for him?
So, I couldn't care less, but it's not my, he doesn't play for chance anymore. So, as far as I'm concerned, I couldn't care less.
Fair enough. You play the hot goalie, though, don't you? I mean, in terms
of course you do. Absolutely.
Barrasso, you can't let the narrative cloud the ability to pick up points. So, I understand it. But at the same time, on a personal level, if it was me trying to put myself in those shoes, I would be feeling pretty crap. The team that I moved away from in order to enhance, further develop my career, and I'm not even getting a game against them. It's an interesting little side story. But Sheffield,
the thoughts on just all you said, but two players have moved away. Joe, the thoughts on Ram Martinelli's interview with Bob Estergaard?
the Greg Wyshynski of the UK strikes again.
Ask him the most ridiculous question about if the Belfast Giants were to win the league, do you think you've made a mistake in moving to the Sheffield Steelers?
Yeah, Marty's reply was obviously the quote that Bob took away was that Marty feels no emotional connection to Belfast anymore. I think it's telling that there has been little to no Twitter response from the Belfast camp and the fan base or whatever about that. What on earth is Ryan Martinelli supposed to say in response to that question? I couldn't have ill feeling about Marty saying that if I tried. He shouldn't have been asked it in the first place. One absolutely nonsensical question in pursuit of a cheap headline. Just complete garbage.
Westerdale's a already.
Do you know what? I thought it was only going to be one beep when you said earlier on. But you know,
I didn't say I said
those games are on, like I said, Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. away to Dundee. You get the webcast of Stars TV, and Saturday and Sunday, 7 p.m. and 4 p.m. at the Sheffield Arena. Webcast from Steelers TV. I'm getting the Sunday's game. I'm really looking forward to that, and I'll be driving, unfortunately, Joel. So
sorry. Oh, Paddy.
I'm traveling with Television's Neil the Coach Russell.
I heard a rumor that Pep's best friend was going to be in the house.
I'm a good friend, Gaz Hall. He's traveling with us as well. So a bit of a roadie for us over from Manchester to Sheffield. Looking forward to that. What's going to be two brilliant games against the Steelers, Saturday and Sunday, 7 p.m. and 4 p.m. respectively. Any other business, boys?
I don't think so.
Don't think so.
Nope. I always give a shout out to a brilliant article from Fox News on young Ethan that was stuck up on Twitter. So we'll retweet that and another excellent thing of him being in North America. And a shout out, as we always do, to young Blake, who's still trying to get him. Is he out of hospital yet? I don't know. Is he?
Yeah, I think he got home during last week, didn't he?
Yeah, he's out of hospital, but he's still not feeling 100%.
And another one just popped into my head there, just that I'm aware of. Young Joshua Baxter and his mum Lisa. They're base and they've been around. They're really, really loyal Giants fans. Josh has been going through I can't even remember the number of surgeries he's had this year so far, but just through another one there over in London. Him and his mum are back and forward, so an absolute warrior of a boy, tougher than I will ever be in my entire life, and it's great to see him always smiling whenever he's through another one. It just the adversity and the challenges and the things that go on in the background during a season, you know, and you only ever catch maybe a fraction of what's going on. It's not that we're singling out these four or five names or whatever. It's more just to make the point that club and that environment is a home and a support base for so many people for so many reasons, and it's part of the reason we love it, isn't it?
100%. Well, on that note, thanks to Kendall McFall, Adam Keefe, Kevin Rain for the time. Thanks to everybody for your interaction on Twitter through the week, and you can get us at AVFTV on Facebook. Just search for A View from the Bridge, and of course you can see us on kingdomofthegiants.com, all of our post games on soundcloud.com/AVFTB, and we'll just try to keep in direction with that. The games, as I said, Wednesday 7:30 p.m. against Dundee away, and then two games away to the Sheffield Steelers Saturday at 7 p.m. Sunday at 4 p.m. Thank you, Joel, and thank you, Simon.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Davey might be back next week.
Not a moment too soon.
When are you guys getting the week off next week? But anyway, wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey, especially if you're traveling to Sheffield or Dundee. And we'll catch you here next week on A View from the Bridge. Podcast Network.